Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Fuse, the insurance marketing software that skyrockets retention, boosts policy per customer, and makes your clients love your agency without having to hire more staff, programmers, or technologists. Thrilled to introduce to you our guest today. I had the opportunity the other day to examine our top 10 most popular podcasts of all time, and I saw something that didn't surprise me, that almost, not all, but almost all of our most popular were interviews that I had with agents. And so I got another one for you today. Now, I want to say a very quick word about that, which is I select the other people, the non-agents, because they are the best of the best of the best. And I think if you reflect on who our non-agent guests were, they really do add tremendous value. And I realize they don't always give you practical, tactical tools that you can put into use in your agency on Tuesday or on Wednesday, but sometimes they do. And if they don't, the reason that I'm interviewing them is because I really do believe that you need to know, with all the change, all the turbulence in the industry right now, all of the infusion of potentially disruptive dollars, we need to know what the future looks like. We need to know how to prepare for it. And I can guarantee you that the best agents that I interview are students of this industry, and they've really made a commitment to understanding what the future is. It's not just that they read more, which I do believe they do. It's not just that they are avid listeners of my podcasts, and I think they are. I could be in for a rude surprise, but I think they are. But they also participate in mastermind groups and attend conferences and really do keep their finger on the pulse. So now, without much further ado, I want to say a word or two about Mike Alexander. In this case, full disclosure, he's been a client of mine for more than a decade. And well, he does give me some credit. Frankly, this is the guy to listen to because he's the one who executes on things that work. So some of the things that he shares, by the way, you'll discover in his story, started with 500 policies. And now, in spite of the fact that he took off 5 years to take care of his family, he's hitting $3 million in revenue, and he's going to share with you the integrated marketing system that he uses to make his revenue consistently go up. And when I say consistently, he really literally can predict how many leads he's going to have at the beginning of the month before the month starts based on the marketing that he unleashes into the field. He will also talk about a significant switch or change he made in the way he perceives his job. You'll perhaps remember that from my interview with Ellie Kaplansky and a lot of the other agents, and I think that is something critical to pay attention to. And then he shares very openly what he does to nurture his existing clients to create the closest possible relationship with the thousands of clients that his agency has. So a couple things I want to share with you before we start the conversation with Mike. Number one, I will remind you or inform you that Wiley has now published the InsurTech book. I think agents should be aware of what is happening in the world of InsurTech. So I'll encourage you, hop on Amazon, get it. Yes, I'm a co-author. No, I do not get royalties, commissions, or overrides. All of the authors sacrificed that for the quality of what I think is an excellent text on the future of the industry. So I'll encourage you to get that. Number two, want me to interview more agents? Nominate them. Want me to interview the CEO of an insurance company or a technology company? Nominate them. And it actually, not only could you possibly give me great ideas, but your nomination sometimes helps me get attention when I need to if I don't have that relationship. And then finally, if anybody is attending the InsurTech Connect conference in Las Vegas in October, I will be there. Feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, and maybe we can grab coffee, grab a beer, or find a little bit of time to share with each other. And I wanted to mention that I got a free ticket from my good friends at Bold Penguin, who were previous guests. Mark DeLeonibus was a previous guest on the Connected Insurance podcast series. So free plug for Bold Penguin for their generosity. I'm very, very grateful. So now, without further ado, it is my privilege to introduce to you Mike Alexander. Mike Alexander Jr., thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you, Michael. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. So first, let's start with the thumbnail sketch. How did you get to where you are? How long have you been in the industry, et cetera?
Well, I mean, I guess I started back in the 90s, early 1990, while I was in college, you know, just working basically a clerking at an insurance company.
Yeah.
You know, and it was one of my many jobs as a college student. But I always found an interest in insurance. And after graduating, I got a pretty decent job in Houston working for a national HMO. The health side of the business, and from there kind of moved around to three or four different companies as they, during that time, they were selling, merging, everything else, and just got to a point where I knew that I didn't see much of a future. I knew that there'd probably be consolidated a few major companies, and there really wasn't much of a future on the carrier side for health insurance. So had a conversation with my father, who happened to be in the business as well. He does Medicare and individual health.
Right. And he owned an agency, is that right?
He did, yeah. Okay. So he was a director for a big grocery store chain here, and then, you know, just made a career decision to change and gotten insurance was it. I think you and I discussed it. It's one of those best kept secrets, and
indeed,
that, you know,
right?
You don't really know how good of an industry and career it can be until you're inundated in it. So, it's been really good for our family. And at the time, I wasn't in PNC; I didn't have any property and casualty experience, but I was extremely interested in it. And I had friends that I was a sales exec for a national carrier, and I'd call on a lot of agents and. So I knew who had interest in selling, and I knew I couldn't afford a big one. So I had a friend that had a small agency with about 500 personal line policies that I ended up purchasing.
And this was
gracious enough to give me free rent.
Okay. So that's how you got your location. And what year, roughly, did you buy the 500 policies?
2000.
Okay.
2001 is actually when it finally went through. But
got it.
It was a unique time in the industry because here in Texas, Farmers was pulling out of the market, and they were a major writer of homeowners' policies. We were having a lot of mold crisis and issues. I think it made national headlines with some claims in Austin, and a lot of the carriers were putting moratoriums in on new business. So we happened to have a couple competitive carriers at the time that, I mean, it was just crazy. We were writing so much business.
Yeah. Okay. So that was 17-ish years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, I know that you took about 5 years off because of family issues.
Yeah. My wife, she got sick with breast cancer, and, you know, we went the traditional route, and everything looked great. And,
yeah.
Started to get back to work, and then it came back with a vengeance, and then we went to the alternative route. So we were going abroad for treatment, and I mean, quite honestly, I was completely out of the business
right.
for 5 years.
Okay, so 17 minus 12 and whatever disruption or backsliding happened during those 5 years. So my understanding, based on our conversation, and by the way, I guess we should say, in full disclosure, you are a client of mine. You are a member of the Million Dollar Club, and you've been a client for a long time.
Absolutely. I attribute whatever success, or if you want to call it success, I do, in part largely to your ideas and philosophies.
That's super generous of you. And as I always say, you did the work. I just had a few ideas. So that being said, now it's my understanding that, you know, in spite of the disruptions, you've been clipping along around a 20% growth rate year after year.
Yeah, on average. So
yeah.
5 years, it was flat.
Yeah.
We didn't have any growth.
Fortunately,
I had a really good staff that were very dedicated to me, and kept the ship afloat. But we weren't building the ship at all at that point.
Yeah. All right. So this year, you're going to achieve $3 million in annual income.
Yep.
Got it. All right. So, well, good growth from 500 policies to $3 million income agency. So we will dive into what's been working for you, what you do that you think is perhaps different than a lot of agents. And I know that you are both a savvy and avid marketer. So we're going to be talking about that perspective. But before we do that, so now you've been in the industry for a long time. I guess we're approaching 30 years, but you've had the agency for 17 and you've been active for 12. What do you think, if you reflect back on, you know, those early days when you purchased that agency and started running, and you contrast that with today, what do you think is different in the life of an agency principal now? And what do you think an agency principal needs to do that's different now than it was back at the turn of this century?
Well, when I first got into it, it was so much easier. For one, you didn't have, you had direct writers, but they weren't as prevalent and as aggressive at that time as they are now. And, you know, even the ones that were direct writers still had an agency model that they supported and would give us, you know, leads,
right?
Co-op dollars. I mean, they really did support the agency force, and that's for the most part gone. Just don't get that from the carriers anymore.
Oh, that level of support from the carriers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so now are you noticing, like, you know, if we go back to the period we're talking about when you first got the agency, forces like on the personal line side, certainly like Progressive Direct or Geico, they weren't nearly the companies that they are now.
Right.
Now, I know. Why don't we tell our listeners what your split of business is so they can get a perspective on that?
The majority of my business, right now it's about 50-50, and that's life and health 50%,
right,
and then property and casualty 50%.
Uh-huh. And
of the P&C, it was 70-30. This year, the growth has really been in commercial.
Yeah.
So we're going to be at 50-50.
Okay. So it was 70 personal, 30 commercial.
Right.
But now with the commercial growth is taking the commercial up. So it's 50-50?
Yeah.
All right.
Commercial is where we have the largest percentage of growth in our agency right now.
Okay. So, again, going back to that question, like, if you're going to compare, you know, the challenges that an agency principal had back in the year 2000 compared to the challenges that they have today, what do you think those differences are?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, technology, by far.
Yeah.
Technology is changing at the speed of of light right now in our industry. And mm-hmm. I think the older agents that are doing it, you know, haphazardly or not doing it full time or don't have 100% of their attention invested in their business, they're going to be the ones that get absorbed or go away.
So do you think that the agency principle of today needs a somewhat different skill set than the agency principle of the year 2000?
Oh, completely.
Okay.
I mean, I was talking to someone the other day, and I was, you know, they were asking how I could get into the property and casualty business, having never sold a property and casualty insurance policy. And I said, you know, I had my carrier supporting me. And of course I invested in training and a lot of other things, but you just don't get that support like you used to. And it's kind of gone away.
Okay. All right. So what do you think, you know, what are the threats that you feel like the independent agency system is facing now?
Oh, well, you've mentioned it when we talk all the time, and I agree wholeheartedly with you. It's the insurtech breaking into our industry. I mean, they're throwing crazy, insane amounts of money investing in technology and things in our industry to absorb market share. And, you know, it's ripe for the picking for them.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. So what are you going to do, and what are the kinds of things that you're doing to give, you know, the word guarantee is a tough one, but to most likely assure your success in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's keeping up with the technology. I mean, a lot of the insurtech businesses that are breaking into our industry are at least currently supporting the agent model.
Well, certainly. Certainly some that I interview on this podcast series are friends.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't. But yeah, I mean, they're innovative. They have products. They have done their research. They know what mm-hmm. the consumer is looking for and wants, and we need to listen.
All right. So your 20% annual growth rate. Let's break that down a little bit and start taking a look at what is it about your agency that gives it that reliable year after year after year growth. So obviously you're a marketer, and I don't know if you I've never asked you this question before. You know, do you see yourself primarily as an insurance guy, or do you see yourself first as an entrepreneur or a marketer? What's kind of the paradigm on how you view your job?
Yeah, I mean, 17 years ago, if you'd asked me that question, I would have told you I was an insurance agent. But,
right.
I mean, today I'm a business owner.
Okay.
And a business owner, I don't sell any policies. I mean, I do occasionally on some larger deals that require my attention or assistance, but outside of those, I don't sell any insurance policies. I make the phones ring for my team.
Okay.
And I support them in being successful in our agency.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question kind of on behalf of at least some of our listeners. All right. Because it's not uncommon that if I'm interviewing somebody who's been really successful, and certainly not uncommon if they've been a client of mine, you know, so if people do go back and listen to the agents who I've interviewed over the last year and a half or so, you'll discover a kind of a common thread, which is to execute on this principle of working on the business, not just in the business. Now, some of my clients, and I'm not dogmatic about this, they still function as a producer, and will typically see that much, much more in commercial lines than personal lines. But we'll often see a progressive move towards being what I would call an insurapreneur, in other words, an entrepreneur who really works on their business, and move farther away from being a producer. So that's, for some people, that's tough, especially if they've done it a long time if they feel that their skill set is being a producer. It's tough if it's a little bit of a smaller agency and a lot of the income depends on the book that the principal slash producer brings into the business. How did you make that happen?
Well, you know, I remember going back. The first boot camp I went to in Chicago that you hosted.
Yeah.
One of the things that I brought back from that, and was probably the most important thing in my insurance career, was that we as insurance agents imposed limits and boundaries on our business that don't exist. I mean, if you have an insurance license in Texas, you don't have to just market in Houston. You can market in the state of Texas. Same is true if you have multiple licenses in multiple states. I mean, market everywhere, not just to your little geographic area because you think that's where your customers are going to come from. They're going to come from wherever you're at if you have a good product. So that's pretty much what I do. I did. I set up systems, which is, again, something else you and I have worked on since we've been working together. And it truly is the systems that make everything work and flow smoothly so that, you know, I can just keep my mind focused on the numbers. And, again, my job is to support my team members and help them be successful in the agency.
Okay, got it. I don't know if you have an accurate answer to this question, but some of your time you spend on quote unquote marketing. So in other words, I mean, there are activities that you're engaged in that, you know, they're not HR and they're not team leadership, et cetera. And they're not selling a policy. They're creating marketing material or somehow functioning in that category. So a couple of questions about that. One, how did you get to that principle, and what were the major influences that made you, cause you're good at it. I know that. What were some of the major influences that made you or helped you to be a good insurance marketer?
I mean, obviously Michael Jantz, was the,
okay. Well, that wasn't, it wasn't foremost. Intended to be
hey,
a softball
I mean,
question.
I'm not saying that because we're on the phone call. Honestly.
Yeah. All right.
Telling you the truth. I, you and I have talked about the story with, our office used to be next door to Don Foreman. Who
okay.
Was,
all right.
A part of your...
25 years ago, I think. Okay. Fair enough. I forgot. Yeah, I totally forgot about that story. Yeah.
I was also an avid follower of, Dan Kennedy, who, I cornered at a meeting he had, and I think it was in Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. But he also mentioned your name, and he said I needed to contact you. So, I mean, those were two pretty big bumps in the head. And if I didn't listen, that's my own fault, right?
Got it. All right. So let's take a look at what some of those actual tactical, practical, actionable items are in marketing. So. You had said that one of your jobs is to make the phones ring. What are some of the things that you do to make the phones ring?
Well, I mean, now it's we utilize direct mail as our primary source of leads because we used to do a lot, I mean, a whole lot of internet. We'd buy internet leads, and initially they were really good. I mean, I could predict what our return would be.
Right.
With some degree of accuracy, but over the years, it's just gotten worse and worse. So we abandoned the internet lead unless we generated ourselves. But even with that, a lot of our internet leads are initiated through direct mail responses.
Got it.
Driving
okay.
them to the website.
All right. So one of your observations, which is interesting, is that the lead gen industry has deteriorated in quality. Is that, am I hearing you right on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there used to be a lot more companies, and I think over time they've consolidated and basically where you just have one or two aggregators of leads and they're selling them to hundreds of people. So by the time you get it, I mean, it's been saturated. They've been hit so many times, it's worthless.
Okay. So, and again, fair to say that when you get that lead, they weren't a lead for ABM. for your agency. They were just somebody who said, I want insurance. So they weren't necessarily attracted to your persona. They weren't attracted to your brand. They weren't attracted to your offer, right? They were just, you know, kind of a semi-warm name and phone number.
Right. And a lot of it, at least when we stopped using it, we were noticing that a lot of the leads we were getting, these people weren't even inquiring about insurance. They were just getting, they were getting hit. They were clicking on something. I mean, basically clickbait.
That okay.
Got their information and yeah. It was sold to us.
So. Okay. Got it. All right. So that died. But I think what's interesting and what I hope people are hearing is that, while people have heard on this podcast series and, of course, pretty much, I suppose, everywhere in the industry that the future of marketing is technology and digital, that doesn't necessarily mean that some of the classic approaches to marketing, like direct mail, that doesn't mean that they're dead. And in fact, and we'll get to your digital approaches in a couple of minutes, but what's your experience with direct mail?
I mean, it's the most predictable form of marketing that I do.
That you have. Okay. All right. Very interesting. And I think I know this. I think I know the answer to this. You nichify it really pretty well, right?
So, well, I try to. I mean, the personal lines are personal lines.
Yeah.
You really don't have anything unique or... I think the personal lines are easy. Easier because more people need it. I may drop 10,000 pieces in a month, but I know mm-hmm. what my return is going to be. So it's easy for me to predict that. Whereas on commercial, I can niche. Some of our niches are construction, mm-hmm. plumbers, electricians. I can send out to my list on those, and it's a little bit harder to predict. But I've yet to lose money on a mailing. More than likely, I break even, and that's my intent. I want to maximize my dollar, my uh-huh. marketing dollar. So
yeah.
It's a matter of how much I can spend to get that customer versus how little. My job is to spend as much money as physically possible to get that customer, so that I'm going to be on my own little island. If I can spend more and get more customers, I'm going to win.
What form of direct mail are you using?
So we usually do three drops. Every person in our list is mailed at least three times mm-hmm. In sequence, and each piece has a different message. But you can clearly tell it's coming from the same place. There's unifying characteristics on them, but typically, I'll do a long-form letter on the first mailing, a postcard on the second, and then a short letter on the third. And then, of course, we use different colors, paper, different color envelopes, so that, I mean, really, I can tell you with each mailing what our typical response rate is. Off each one.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to step back and look at this as a system. So do you have the same sequence of mailing pretty much every month?
Every month.
Okay.
Same thing.
And
if it's working, I'm going to keep using it till it stops.
Okay. we have a couple things I know we're testing, but...
yeah.
All right. Okay. So, and the long-form letters, when you say long-form, how long are they?
The homeowners is two pages.
Okay.
The commercial is three pages.
Okay. And in a typical month, how many pieces go out?
For... personal lines, about 10,000.
And commercial lines?
That varies depending upon the number of responses we're getting per month. We use Google AdWords. We put, the pay-per-click.
Yeah.
So if we're getting a good response on, and the cost is right on the Google pay-per-clicks, we'll scale back the mailing. But I would say anywhere between 5,000 and 7,500 pieces per month.
Okay, got it. So we're somewhere around 15,000 to 17,500 pieces going out from your agency every single month. So multiply that times 12. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and that's just those are just property and casualty. We also have a group called campaign.
Okay,
that we
got
do
it.
And,
all right, okay. Fair to say that your growth is probably fueled by not just really good systems, but a well-calculated investment. And that investment, your investment in growth, is more than the average agency.
I would think it is.
Yeah.
Because we spend an insane amount of money on marketing. And, I mean, my mail house bill is just astronomical, but
right.
They love me there.
Yeah, well, and you like spending that money, am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If I could spend more, I would.
Right. Okay. Your personalized list. A couple of real quick questions. Your personalized list, how do you get that?
So over the years, when we were buying the internet leads, we were buying a whole lot. So I'm about at the end of that. It's been about 5 years since we cut off or scaled back from that. But I've been hitting those people for the last 5 years. And then I also buy an X-State list through a local vendor.
Got it. All right. So the house list is getting old, but the vendor list, while they probably don't have the relationship, is probably fresher. And on the commercial line side, your list?
So I market to contractors. That's primarily where we market.
Right.
And we buy the list from the state. You know, they have to have a license.
Got it. Okay.
According to their license, they have to have insurance. So.
Got it. All right. One of my favorite sources of lists, governmental entities.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So direct mail. Now, you had also mentioned that you do pay-per-click ads.
I do, and I'm spending I was spending a lot. I've been scaling it back a little bit because the direct mail is more predictable, and I can get more out of that marketing dollar in the direct mail than the Google, because, you know, as you know, it fluctuates.
Yeah.
And you can get wiped out real quick if you don't pay attention to what it's doing. So it's a little bit more time consuming and labor intensive, but
mm-hmm.
It works.
Yeah.
I mean, there's times that my ROI on the pay-per-click is 2-1, 3-1.
Oh, in first year commission?
First year. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Okay. But then and then there are times where that flips around and it's.
It does. It flips around. So on average, it's a break-even proposition.
Okay.
And basically, I'm buying renewal. I'm buying renewals is what I'm doing.
Uh huh. Got it. All right. So direct mail of a couple different forms, pay-per-click ads, on Google AdWords, right?
Mm-hmm.
Facebook. Yeah. I just don't recall if you've.
I tried Facebook,
okay.
And I haven't been able to crack that. I've tried multiple times.
Yeah.
It's not a lot. It's very inexpensive, but I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I just haven't been able to figure it out.
Got it. All right. And then, you and I are about to crack the code on some really interesting LinkedIn lead gen, but we're probably
I'm really excited.
We're not
that.
Ready to report on the results of that one yet. So we'll let's hold off on that.
I'm extremely excited about it.
And anything else on lead gen? I mean, Mike, you know that my marketing model is ACOR, A-C-O-R, attract, convert, optimize, and retain. So far, when we're talking about marketing, you and I, so far, all we've talked about is attract, how you generate leads.
Right.
Anything else? Do you do anything else to generate leads, referral programs, et cetera?
Oh, yeah, of course. We do
okay.
a newsletter.
Okay.
newsletter, referral program. We solicit to mortgage brokers.
Ah, okay.
They get gift cards.
Yeah. Okay.
God, yeah, I mean, you name it. We do it.
Okay. So now let's take a look at some of the other elements of this. So obviously getting a new customer starts with a lead, and then, we need to convert them into a customer. And then, and in your case, as in most, that requires usually what? An inbound phone call, right? Somebody calls the agency and one of your very capable producers closes that call, right?
Right.
Okay. And so now we have a customer, and you also want to do everything you can to market to them so you can, increase your revenue per customer, your policy count, and obviously create that strong emotional bond so that they stay with you longer and they give you more referrals. So what kind of marketing do you do to your existing customer base?
The existing base, so initially when they're brought into the agency and they purchase a policy, they're given a welcome kit. The welcome kit will have, you know, basically little flyers and brochures of all the services that we offer. Almost always, and if they don't, you know, part of the process of a new customer on commercial lines is they have to ask them when their home and auto renew.
Right. Yeah.
Because assuming everybody has a home or an auto or renters or something, they're going to ask it and they'll put it the X date in the system, or they transfer it to a personal lines agent and that person starts taking the information down to provide them with a quote right away. And, you know, you've told us for years and years and years that the best way to keep a customer is to solidify them with your agency is for them to have more than one policy with you. Where, you know, it shows that people that have more than one policy stay a lot longer than those that only have monoline coverage.
Right. Okay. And so your staff is engaged in cross-selling when they touch them, right? But you're also sending is it a paper newsletter?
It is. Yeah, we mail it out every month. So
all right.
We have, I think, 8,000 newsletters go out every month.
Okay. Wow. All right. Just for a moment, like, tell us what are the typical things that go into that newsletter?
We try to keep as much insurance stuff out of it as we,
okay.
as we can.
Right.
You know, you see a lot of pictures of our staff in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, hopefully a picture with one of their kids, an accomplishment that one of their kids did.
Yeah.
You know, more personal stuff. We'll talk about what to do when going on vacation, you know, grilling safety tips in the summertime, you know, what to do if, you know, your house starts to flood, that type of stuff. And then, you know, we are involved in the community, not as much as I'd like, and we're going to work on that, but
yeah.
We are involved in the community. And so whenever we have the opportunity to, you know, to put that in the newsletter, we do as well.
Who creates the newsletter?
I do.
Okay, got it. So that's a marketing function of yours.
Yes.
So now I obviously, you also use technology to provide an ongoing stream of meaning and delight to your customers. Tell us what you do there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in and of itself has shown to be the best way of increasing our business, not only flow and volume, but also with retention, because we use the Agency Revolution system.
Right. Okay.
We've built in sequences so that every customer is basically touched a minimum of 12 times a year.
Right. Okay. So they're touched digitally 12 times a year. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. That's strictly the digital.
Now, let me ask you a question. So those 12 touches that you're talking about, are those all nurturing touches?
For the most part.
Okay.
We throw in a flood cross-sell.
We have that
going out three times a year.
Okay.
We use that as much for a cross-sell as we do for an E&O projector.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, of course, we flood here in Houston. So
right.
we get those calls, you know. I'm sure everybody does. What do you mean blood's not covered on my homeowner's insurance policy? So this helps us protect ourselves.
All right. Any other cross-sell campaigns that you're running digitally?
We do. We do home, auto, health.
Mm-hmm.
It's a minimum of 12 times a year. And it's in most cases, if it's a personal lines customer, they're hit more like 18 times a year.
Got it. All right. You're a marketer. when you look By the way, thanks for sharing all of that. That's generous of you. I can't get every agent to, you know, sort of reveal what they're doing to succeed, maybe because they're nervous somebody's going to copy it. But I think what you said before we got on, you know, I hit the record button is, hey, if it's good for the industry, I'm going to share it. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you for that. So here you are sitting on an agency that you own. It's got $3 million in revenue, and it's predictably hitting about 20% growth per year, which gets to be pretty interesting the bigger you get. What do you think, but now realistically, we know that the industry's, you know, it's facing some pressures and stresses. How do you think the future looks for the independent insurance agency system?
I think it looks bright. I just, the old way of doing business just isn't going to work anymore.
So the old way is what? What's the distinction? I mean, I know in my mind, I think what that is, but when you say that, how do you make a distinction between the old way and the new way?
Well, I mean, the old way was you get a space in a populated area on a street that has lots of traffic,
okay,
and
right.
You hang your sign and you wait for people to come in and buy insurance.
Okay, got it. All right, fair enough. And the new way?
Well, the new way is you got an ACOR.
Yeah, okay,
ACOR. You have to attract them, you have to convert them, you have to optimize that relationship and then retain it so you make money.
All righty. So, Mike, if I'll ask you to sort of phrase this in the billboard model. If you're going to deliver a message to the industry, and you could say anything that you wanted, but you had to put it on a billboard and everybody's driving 65, 70 miles an hour, so it can't be much more than 8 or 10 words or they're not going to be able to read it. What's the message that you would want to deliver to the independent insurance agent of today?
Well, I mean, this industry is the best kept secret that I know of.
Yeah,
people I know that are in this industry were either brought into it, inherited the business, or worked for the carrier and just got stuck in it. You just don't see a lot of young people coming in to our industry.
Yeah,
and I think that's where we as agents and agency owners and business owners need to focus and attract young people with these great new ideas that they have that we've never even thought of. Into our business.
I know I'm interrupting you, so I'm going to let you finish, but what you said, you know, made me wonder. So do you think that that the younger generation is more in touch with the contemporary model or the contemporary methods of marketing and communication than boomers are?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
We had a conversation about this in our office recently. We have our average age here is probably, I would say, mid-30s. Mm-hmm. So we have younger people in our office, and one of the questions was they were talking about one of the older agents was communicating that they don't know how to sell to the younger generation because it's a different process, it's mm-hmm. a different procedure. And his statement was, I'm too old to sell to them. And that's not true. You just need to be trained and systems put in place so that you can and attract them and sell to the younger generation.
Got it. All right. So I know I kind of interrupted you. So back to that question. If you were going to deliver one concise message, and I'm putting you on the spot saying concise, but I'm going to do it anyway. We can wordsmith it later. But if you were going to deliver a message to the independent insurance agent of today, what do you think they need to hear?
I would say fight for it. You know, stay relevant so that the insurance agent doesn't go by the wayside or as the way of the travel agent.
All right.
We need to stay relevant.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate that. And I agree with you. So, Mike, most of the people who listen to this, I mean, they're in our industry. You're not selling, you're not a vendor, you're not selling technology, you're not a carrier. And I know, and so I don't want you to get a barrage of phone calls. Mike, you know, tell me everything Okay, that's not fair to you. But if somebody did want to reach out to you with a specific question and it wasn't overly time consuming, how could they possibly do that?
They can email me.
It's, fair enough.
It's mike.alexanderjr@getagreatquote.com.
Let's do that again. Mike?
Period. Alexander.
Got it.
JR.
Okay, because you are the junior.
I'm a junior.
Yeah, okay. Yep. All right, Mike. Dot Alexander JR at
getagreatquote.com.
Very good. All right. That's a great URL, by the way. All righty. Well, Mike, I look forward to seeing you at our next Million Dollar Club meeting, and I want to thank you so much for your generosity and your insight, and of course, congratulate you on your success. So on behalf of our listeners, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.